Hi, everybody. Welcome to English Digest. I'm Pat.
And I'm Tom, and today we're going to continue talking about our featured novel, The Age of Innocence, by Edith Wharton. Actually, today we're going to be talking more about the author herself, Edith Wharton, but as Pat did say yesterday, it's kind of an autobiographical novel here. Perhaps Edith is playing the role of Ellen in the actual novel herself, but we are going to be talking about the life and times of the author, Edith Wharton, in our program today.
Yeah, keep in mind what happens during the actual novel that we summarized yesterday and when it is set, particularly, because Edith knows a lot of these things. Edith Wharton was there during this time period, so she's got a very good knowledge of not just what things were like, but also the way people thought and felt about things. And we'll find out on the third day how that all really came together in the novel. But let's start by reading the article that explains the kind of life and works of Edith Wharton.
Edith Wharton was born into an affluent family of New York City's upper class in 1862. As a young girl, she spent 6 years traveling and living in Europe, receiving her education through private tutors. By the time she returned to the U.S., she was fluent in 4 languages. Consumed by the written word, Wharton started writing poetry and fiction before she reached her teens. However, Wharton's mother viewed her liking for writing and reading with disdain, and Wharton was forbidden from reading novels until she was married. At age 23, Wharton married a gentleman 12 years her senior. They were considered well-matched by many simply because they belonged to the same social class. Nevertheless, their marriage was later marred by her husband's depression. Wharton, like Ellen in The Age of Innocence, yielded to the temptation of adultery and faced censure for her dishonorable behavior. Against all social mores of the time, Wharton filed for divorce after 28 years of marriage, further segregating herself from society. Wharton's scandalous affair and subsequent divorce prompted her to move abroad, and she eventually settled in Paris just before the outbreak of World War I. During the war, she decided to cease writing and aid France by joining the war effort. Her unwavering dedication to the cause was so great that she was awarded the Legion of Honor, France's highest decoration. After the war, Wharton put pen to paper on The Age of Innocence. She blended her recollections of childhood and experiences in Europe in this Pulitzer Prize-winning novel. The juxtaposition of stifling old New York and reviving post-war Europe not only displayed a clear contrast between two cultures, but also alluded to Wharton's own liberation.
Okay, so that is our article about Edith Wharton's life. Let's look at it and remember to pay attention as we go to the bits that kind of relate to her novel that we're discussing. So Edith Wharton was born into an affluent family of New York City's upper class in 1862. If someone or some people are affluent, they have a lot of money, they have a lot of respect from the community, they maybe own buildings, run companies, they're involved in a lot of important matters. But it's just generally they have a lot of wealth and possessions. They're able to afford what they want. So she was born in also into the upper class. So that's kind of people maybe who have titles or own land or have all sorts of other things like that. You know, own many houses throughout, maybe houses in other parts of the country, have servants working for them and so on. So she was kind of born with a silver spoon in her mouth, as the phrase goes.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. This happened way back in 1862, just when the American Civil War was, I think it had already been
going. In full swing, yeah.
Yeah, it was in full swing at the time. And as a young girl, she spent 6 years traveling and living in Europe, receiving her education through private tutors, which meant she did not have to attend classes in the conventional sense. A private tutor, of course, is someone who is hired to teach you one-on-one.
Yep, so she traveled around Europe, so she probably got a different kind of education to other American girls at that time, and maybe had her eyes and mind opened a bit to kind of different things that the world has to offer. So by the time she returned to the US, she was fluent in four languages, which is pretty impressive. If you're fluent, you can speak and understand and read a language almost as if you were a native speaker. You're basically as good as. Now, I am barely fluent in English, never mind Chinese or any other language. So to be fluent in four languages, which you're probably thinking French, Spanish, maybe German, Italian, something like that, that is pretty impressive going for someone who is still a very young woman.
Mm-hmm. Lots of people in Europe are fluent in several languages, and I'm kind of surprised you're not fluent in French, since England's right next to France there. Did you study French before at all?
I did French at school for 5 years, but it's kind of all been forgotten. I need to spend more time with a language. It's not one of my skills, I have to confess.
Well, now you need to work on Chinese since you're in Taiwan. But in any case here, yes, she returned to the U.S. and she could speak four languages fluently. Consumed by the written word, Wharton started writing poetry and fiction before she reached her teens. So if you're consumed by something, here the word consume means to eat something, like ants might consume all of your food at a picnic, so you better watch out. But in this case here, if you're consumed by something, that means you really like that thing and you think about it all the time. So she was consumed by the written word. You could say she was obsessed by writing and reading and stuff like that. So she wanted to do some of her own writing. She began to write poetry and fiction when she was very, very young, before she reached her teens, which means when she was younger than 12 years old.
Yeah, which again is pretty impressive going. Now, this may have been very good, and we would be impressed by that these days, but in those times, society kind of thought differently, particularly about women writing and women being educated, especially in New York's upper class, where probably all the want women to do is kind of marry and produce heirs. And that's why our article says, however, Wharton's mother viewed her liking, that's Edith's liking, for writing and reading with disdain. And Wharton was forbidden from reading novels until she was married. So she had a liking, this she was consumed by reading and writing, consumed by the written word, she had a liking for it, but her mother viewed that with disdain. She thought, oh, that's not very good, that's not appropriate, I don't care for that at all, I think that's a bad thing, I don't think it's a good influence. I'm going to look at that with this feeling of disdain, which is you don't like it, approve of it, and you consider it as below you somehow. And because of that, she forbade Wharton, or using the passive voice, Wharton was forbidden from reading novels. She wasn't allowed to. They said, okay, that's it, no reading. We're going to lock the library. You can't have any books, okay, because you've already read enough, young lady. You need to stop that. You need to stop thinking for yourself.
You're going to be the wife of a rich guy, so you don't want to be too smart. So yes, don't do any reading. Don't write poetry. It is so at least that's what her mother felt. And, of course, she was married later on. So, yeah, I guess if you're married back in those times, if you were married back then and you were really smart, it was, I guess, kind of a threat to the family. You might have too many of your own opinions and you might not do what you're told and stuff like that. So, yes, she was discouraged from being independent and free thinking.
Yeah, now at age 23, Wharton did indeed marry to a gentleman 12 years her senior. Here we're using gentleman both to mean just a man, but also somebody from a good family and from high society, that kind of older meaning of gentleman. And he was 12 years her senior. Senior, of course, is someone older, so 12 years her senior just means 12 years older than she was. So she was 23, he was 35. Now, these days, that's not too common, but back in those days, it would have been fairly common. Women got married quite young, whereas a gentleman could wait a while, particularly like we mentioned with the American Civil War. Maybe he's waited until he's out of the war before getting married. But he was a lot older than her, which nowadays, yeah, not so sure. But they were considered well-matched by many, just because they were from the same social class. They were both from the upper class, so everybody would have thought, well, great, she's marrying within that class, superb, that's perfect, that they are as well matched as they need to be.
Yep, she's from an affluent family, he's from an affluent family, they have that in common. They know how to drink fine French wine, and they know fine European cuisine and all the great spots in Europe, and they've been to Monaco and places like that. So, of course, they're a match made in heaven, so everybody thought, yes, they're going to get along spottingly. And nevertheless, though, their marriage was later marred by her husband's depression. Mar here just is a verb. It just means something is impaired or it is disfigured. It is basically made to look uglier than it was before, not only in appearance but also in characteristics or features and stuff like that. So, yes, the marriage was marred or it was kind of ruined.
Yeah, spoiled.
There you go, by her husband's depression. And he was depressed, which means he suffered from some kind of mental problem. And back then, they probably didn't have lithium and stuff like that. So they probably thought he was mentally ill because he was so sad all the time and thought about suicide and thought life was useless. So, of course, a person like that can really ruin a marriage.
Yeah, and so he wanted to give up, and that made Wharton very sad. And like Ellen in the story, The Age of Innocence, Wharton yielded to the temptation of adultery. So she was tempted. She felt a temptation. She wanted to do something, even though she knew it was kind of wrong and kind of bad for her. That is a temptation, just a feeling that you really want to do something, even if you know it's bad. And she yielded to it. She kind of gave up. She stopped fighting against this temptation. She just kind of said, all right, you know, I can't fight it anymore. I'm going to basically be adulterous. I'm going to have an affair. I'm going to get involved with another man. That is adultery. And she faced censure for her dishonorable behavior. Censure means that kind of society as a whole is disapproving of you. It's kind of saying you're a bad person. It's another way of saying she lost her reputation. Everybody kind of started saying bad things about her. People didn't want to invite her to parties. Kind of like what's Ellen, the situation Ellen is in at the start of the novel.
Indeed, and of course nowadays if you're fooling around outside your marriage, it's still kind of looked down on, but maybe nowadays they would have had some sympathy for her because her husband was depressed and he was never in the mood for love and stuff like that, so she felt kind of lonely. And maybe people would think, well, maybe you should have a little lover on the side. But back then, of course, it was horrible, and she faced censure, which, of course, is a criticism from society because of her dishonorable behavior. How can you do such a thing? Okay, we'll continue talking about the life and times of Edith Wharton in just a couple of seconds, but right now it's time to stop talking and let our Chinese teacher take over for a few minutes.
大家好，我是 Alice。今天我们要来阅读的文章是 Unit 15，文学单元的第二天课程。在本课中介绍了《纯真年代》这本小说的作者 Edith Wharton， 包括她的生平背景以及和书中主角相似的地方。我们看到第一段的倒数第二句。Consumed by the written word, Wharton started writing poetry and fiction before she reached her teens. 华顿着迷于文字，在他青少年时期前就开始写诗和小说。本句的前半部分使用了分词结构。本句原来是由两个完整句子所组成。第一句是 Wharton was consumed by the written word。第二句是 Wharton started writing poetry and fiction before she reached her teens。 由于两句的主词相同，都是 Wharton， 省略了第一句的主词，并用逗号连接两句。由于第一句是被动语态，可以省略 be 动词 was， 只留下过去分词 consumed。 如果第一句是主动语态，则是将动词改成现在分词 ving。例如原来的两个句子是 David arrived at his office. David found a pile of documents on his desk. 合并成分词构句就变成 Arriving at his office. David found a pile of documents on his desk. 大卫抵达办公室就发现他的桌上有一堆文件。接着我们看到这一句的一个动词 consume。C-O-N-S-U-M-E Consume 在本句是指 To take all of your attention so that you cannot think of anything else， 也就是使着迷或使全神贯注的意思。片语 be consumed with or by something 就是指着迷或全神贯注于某事物。例如 Jamie was consumed by the online games and didn't notice it was time for dinner. 杰米全神贯注于线上游戏，而没有注意到该吃晚餐了。我们接着看到下一句。However, Wharton's mother viewed her liking for writing and reading with disdain, and Wharton was forbidden from reading novels until she was married. 然而，华顿的母亲以轻蔑的眼光看待她对写作和阅读的喜爱，而且华顿在结婚前都被禁止读小说。我们看到这一句的一个字 liking, L-I-K-I-N-G, liking 在本句做名词用。片语 take a liking to somebody or something 就是指喜爱某人或某事物。其他表示喜欢的用法还有 be fond of, found, F-O-N-D 和 take a fancy to, fancy, F-A-N-C-Y。 例如 Christina took a fancy to perfume, she now wears it every day。 克里斯提娜喜欢香水，他现在每天都涂抹香水。
We're going to take a short break, but please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hi guys, welcome back. We're discussing the life of Edith Wharton, who wrote the story The Age of Innocence, which is our literature unit, our literature topic for this month. And we know that Ellen had an affair. She yielded to the temptation of adultery. She had an affair with somebody. She faced censure, criticism, and loss of reputation from her society. And it got worse, because against all the social mores of the time, Wharton filed for divorce after 28 years of marriage, further segregating herself from society. So back then, it was just not done to divorce. People didn't divorce. They kept, if there were problems in the marriage, they kept them secret. They kept the public face very honourable. So a social more is what is common, what is normal at the time. Now, it looks like the word more, but it's pronounced more. And so to divorce somebody was not a social more. It was just not done. It was not acceptable. But she filed for divorce. She kind of petitioned the court and said, that's it, I want a divorce officially. That's what we mean by filed. And in doing that, she segregated herself. She removed herself from society. She made it even more difficult for her old friends and acquaintances to be involved with her, because she'd kind of lost so much face. She'd lost so much of her reputation. She was a scandalized and shamed woman.
Indeed. So she faced segregation, which means when things are separated, especially if you talk about racial segregation in the south of the United States, well, about 50 years ago or so, maybe longer than that. But yes, indeed, she kind of isolated herself from society, so she was probably all by herself. But hey, that was probably better for her, because that would give her plenty of time to write novels and poetry. Well, Wharton's scandalous affair and subsequent divorce prompted her to move abroad, and she eventually settled in Paris just before the outbreak of World War I. So again, because of her scandalous affair and her divorce, well, she later moved to Paris. Scandalous means it has a lot to do with scandal, which of course makes people in public all mad at you because you've done something you're not supposed to do, like have an affair or steal money from a company or something. So indeed, her scandalous behavior and also the subsequent divorce. Subsequent means what happened after that. So subsequently, she got divorced, and that prompted her to move abroad. Prompt here as a verb just means to encourage you or get you to do this sort of thing, gives you this idea. She decided, heck with New York, I'm sick of this place and all these people talking about me behind my back. I'm going to Paris, where they're a little bit more liberal, and they don't care about stuff like that.
Yeah, unfortunately, her timing wasn't too good, because she settled in Paris just before the outbreak of World War I. So we use the word outbreak to talk about when something starts with kind of a lot of energy and violence and very kind of suddenly. So we could talk about the outbreak of a disease, when suddenly it kind of, whoa, and suddenly everyone's got this disease, it flares up and it suddenly gets everywhere. And we also use outbreak to talk about a war beginning. A war seldom begins kind of slowly and gradually. It happens with a boom and a bang and a crash. So World War I, it broke out, which is kind of another way to say that the war broke out. The outbreak of war, it just means the start, but it's kind of a violent start.
That's the war, of course, that took place in Europe, what, between 1914 and 1919?
Yep, almost, yep.
The Germans versus the French and the Americans and the British, and everybody seemed to be involved there. So, yes, indeed, that was a pretty big war there. And during the war, she decided to cease writing and aid France by joining the war effort. So she was living in Paris at the time. I don't think the Germans actually were able to get into Paris in World War I. They did in World War II, but not in World War I. But still, France was in big trouble there with Germans on their soil, so she decided to help out. I'm going to help the French here. I'm going to join the war effort. Even though they probably didn't want women actually fighting, she could still help behind the lines.
Yeah, look after people, get supplies and food, raise money, keep people's spirits up. That's kind of the war effort. Help with the war in any way you can. And her unwavering dedication to this cause was so great, she was awarded the Legion of Honor, France's highest decoration. So if you are dedicated to something, or if you have a lot of dedication to something, dedication is the noun form, then it just means you're giving all your efforts, you're pouring all your heart and soul into this thing. You're just never kind of stopping with what you want to do. It's your goal, it's your purpose. And hers was unwavering. It never stopped. She never kind of felt like giving up. She just kept going to support the war effort. She did everything she could. She never took a backward step. And it was so great that it impressed many people. People thought, wow, she's doing a lot for our cause here. She's really working hard. She's done so many good things. We will award her the Legion of Honor. A legion is the name for a kind of a company or an army. So if you join this Legion of Honor, it's kind of like you're joining this group of people who have done great things for France, sort of famous soldiers and artists and writers and thinkers and all the famous people of France. That's kind of what we mean by the Legion of Honor, kind of France's greatest people.
Right, and of course, the Legion of Honor is France's highest decoration. Usually a decoration is something you use to make something look prettier, like Christmas decorations on your tree. But here, it's an award or a medal or something like that. So she got this big award from France, and of course, she was an honorable citizen of France, and she could live there as long as she wanted. Now, after the war, Wharton put pen to paper on the Age of Innocence. So here, if you put pen to paper, that's just means you start writing something. And of course, this is when she started writing her novel, The Age of Innocence, and she blended her recollections of childhood and experiences in Europe in this Pulitzer Prize winning novel. Okay, so yes, she blended her experiences or blended her recollections. To blend means to mix two or three things together. Okay, blended, mixed them together. Like, for example, Zhenju Nai Cha is a blend of tapioca balls and tea and milk and sugar and stuff like that. It's blended together in a blender, usually. And a recollection is just a memory of something.
That's right. And this novel won her the Pulitzer Prize, which is one of the U.S.'s greatest awards, and again, another award, given to novel writers. If something wins the Pulitzer Prize, you know it's really good. It received a lot of favorable reviews and so on, so it's a prize that's still given that people want to win. And this mixture of recollections formed something called a juxtaposition, which is in the next sentence. The juxtaposition of stifling old New York and reviving post-war Europe. So a juxtaposition is when you take two things that ought to be kind of opposite each other, or very different from one of each other, and you put them together in a way that shows not only the contrast between them, but the similarities, and shows how the two positions can kind of highlight the way people think. So it's the way she uses the two things together. That's what we mean by juxtaposition. And the two things that she kind of blended and juxtaposed, because there is a verb form, is stifling old New York. Something that's stifling is difficult to breathe in. It's kind of thick and it covers you and you can't move and it's not very comfortable. It's sort of too warm and crowded. And that was, for her, what old New York was like, this old society of rich families and people can't do what they want and people have to follow convention. For her, she felt it was stifling.
Indeed. And also she contrasts this or juxtaposes this stuff with reviving post-war Europe. To revive means to make something living again. So it not only displayed a clear contrast between the two cultures, but also alluded to Wharton's own liberation. And liberation, of course, is when you're free, when you're set free. Liberation, to allude to, just means to kind of make a suggestion or make a sort of hint at something. So I think, yes, indeed, she was kind of a prisoner in New York because she had to abide by the rules of society there, where in Paris, she was an outsider. She could do anything she wanted to, and I suppose Pat and myself kind of feel the same way here in Taiwan because we're not really from here. We don't really have to play by the rules here, so we feel a sense of liberation living here as well.
That's right. Well, that is Edith Wharton's life. We're going to look more into detail about how this experience, her life experience, affected her writing and the themes in The Age of Innocence in tomorrow's lesson. But right now, we're going to hand you over for one more time to our Chinese teacher.
文章的第三四段提到 Wharton 在被社会孤立后，在第一次大战爆发时去战地帮忙，而他的奉献也让他得了勋章。我们看到第三段的第一句， Wharton's scandalous affair and subsequent divorce prompt her to move abroad。华顿不道德的婚外情和随后的离婚促使他移居国外。动词 prompt, P-R-O-M-P-T, 在本句是促使的意思。Prompt somebody to do something, 就是说促使某人去做某事。例如 The bad working environment prompt me to look for a new job. 这个糟糕的工作环境促使我找新工作。Prompt 也可以做形容词用，意思是迅速的、及时的。例如 ，Sally is prompt in paying her rent. She was late only once in 3 years. 莎莉付房租不拖延，她三年内只有迟交过一次。此外 ，prompt 也可以做副词用，放在 a clock 后面，用来表示几点整。例如。Our tour guide tells us that we will head to Mount Fuji at 8 o'clock prompt. 导游说我们八点将会准时前往富士山。以上就是今天的课程详解，谢谢收听。
Okay, guys, that is the end of day 2 of our article. Join us again tomorrow where we're going to do some juxtaposing of our own and take the themes of the Age of Innocence and reflect Wharton's own life experiences and show how they all came together to make this very successful novel. So join us again for that. For English Digest, I'm Pat.
And I'm Tom.
We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye.